Well, look, there was a little distraction, obviously, on their side when it came to Georgia. But to me, that's in the past. I've been saying that, guys, literally for over a year now, that I was going to support our nominee, that we had to win Georgia. The road to the White House runs through Georgia. And I still believe today we cannot afford four more years of Kamala Harris.
We, the people of the United States.
More perfect.
Your form of our perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Hans, welcome back to the show. Today's a big day because Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are going to sit down and talk to the American people. I'm wondering what your thoughts are, you know, on the First Amendment and how it's the freedom of the press is a very key core part of that First Amendment. I'm just wondering of your assessment right now of how America is flexing that First Amendment freedom of the press muscle in this campaign season.
Well, I don't think the mostly liberal press is doing a very good job of exercising that muscle, because they are not asking and haven't been asking Kamala Harris the kind of tough questions that ought to be asked of someone who has suddenly become the presidential nominee. And, you know, I actually heard some folks yesterday saying how bizarre it was that she is bringing along her vice president.
Mm-hmm.
There were people saying, what, she has to have a man with her when she's doing her first interview? I mean, that too is just a bit bizarre. But as you know, she has refused to talk about almost anything and has not given an explanation for all the sudden changes in policy that her campaign, not her, that her campaign has put out.
You know, Hans, I think about all the different things we talk about with you on a regular basis. We've talked about, elections and how the voting has changed. You've written a book about it called Our Broken Elections. I want to talk to you in a bit about what Texas has done to clean up their voter rolls. We've talked about the Justice Department, and you've served as a DOJ lawyer. You understand what lawfare looks like and what justice looks like. All of these things always circle back to whether or not we have an honest media that pursues truth and that First Amendment, because all of these things can, in the darkness and in the shadows, what is it? Democracy dies in darkness. Is that the Washington Post? If the media does not pursue truth for the American people, all the dominoes in all the directions start falling against the American people. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are and how bad it is. How does our media, how is it supposed to compare to other countries? And can we get it back to an honest place for the American people?
Well, I'll tell you, about a week ago, we had a law professor, Jonathan Turley, over at the Heritage Foundation for a dinner. Three folks I know see him all the time on Fox News. Look, he's just published a book in which he says, and I agree with him, that we are facing the greatest threat to our First Amendment rights that we have faced in our entire history. And think about this. At the very same time that the media has not been asking questions of the Democratic nominee for president, what did we have? We had Mark Zuckerberg admit that his social media company caved in to pressure from who? The Biden Kamala Harris administration to censor the opinions of Americans who had accounts with his company. So, it should scare everyone in this country that the First Amendment, frankly, is being damaged in such a way that we have big companies censoring Americans' opinions.
Yes. I mean, that is another huge story that has come out of the last 5 years is censorship, probably even more than that. But there has been collusion between elected officials in government and our ability with privately owned companies to speak about things that we freely want to speak about. I don't know if you have insight on this. I don't know if this is a weird question to ask Hans von Spakovsky, but I love talking to you, so I'm going to ask you anyway. What does this agenda-driven leftist media get out of protecting the Democrat Party and not advocating for the American people? What do they get out of that?
Well, what you have to understand is when you look up, when you look at the political makeup of newsrooms, whether it's the New York Times, the Washington Post, what you find are radical ideological leftists. And they don't believe in free speech. They don't believe that their opponents, and they consider anyone with traditional views, anyone who's conservative, they think you shouldn't have a voice. And so they are all in to help Kamala Harris and Democrats win because they believe in big government. They see nothing wrong with censorship because they assume, well, we're not going to get censored because we've got the right lines. We are the woke culture. We're not going to get censored. But all those people who disagree with us, they should be censored. And not only will we censor them, but if the government can help censor them, that's a good thing. That's why they do that.
Well, everything is downstream from a dishonest press. You can't have truth, and you also can't hold anybody accountable if we don't actually have truth. And I think that that's one of the biggest problems facing the American people and these candidates in this election. I wanted to get to the story out of Texas. Even the New York Times headline here, Texas removed 1 million from voter rolls, but most had moved or died. And it's almost like it's dismissive. There's 1 million people in the Texas voter rolls that even the New York Times is admitting existed there, but they're kind of shoving it aside because they've moved or died. What happens if people who have moved or died are still on voter rolls in states? Is that potentially problematic?
Well, yeah, and they don't mention the fact that that list included 6,500 aliens. Well, every time an alien votes, that's voiding the vote of a citizen. 6,000 voters were removed who are felons, who are in prison, who aren't supposed to be voting. So right there, 12,500 voters who could make the difference in any election. And I actually checked, and in the last just couple of years, they've had at least 5 elections in Texas, state and local elections that were decided by, guess what? A tie vote.
Whoa.
So just one of those 6,500 aliens who were on the rolls could have made a difference in that election.
That's incredible. I mean, it's I would assume it's going to be impactful across the nation. And of course, the Electoral College makes a big difference. I'm looking at a Newsweek article right now. States where non-citizens are being purged from voter rolls. Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Ohio, Virginia. I mean, some of those are impactful states. And I would assume if it's not in the presidential Electoral College, there are, as you said, statewide or local races where that's going to make a huge impact.
It is. And look, I was just at a hearing in May in front of the House Administration Committee on this very topic, and all the Democratic members of the committee were saying, aliens registering and voting, that's not happening anywhere. And yet now we hear Texas took off 6,500. 3 weeks ago, Governor Youngkin of Virginia announced that they had taken 6,300 aliens off the rolls. That's a lot of people who are not eligible to vote, who are on our voter rolls. And as you say, it could make the difference in a close election. And could it affect the presidential election? Well, hopefully not. But then in 2020, Arizona and Georgia were decided by only about, 10,000 votes?
Yeah. I mean, cleaning the voter rolls has to be one of the main things that state by state that we take care of. And at least some of these states are, and they're paving the way. I wanted to ask you about the RFK Jr. endorsement of Donald Trump and then his suspension of his campaign, but not ending of his campaign, where he said, I'm going to stay on the ballot in the red and blue states where his name is on the ballot, but I'm going to take my name off the states where it might push the outcome into Kamala Harris's territory. I want people who support me to support Donald Trump, and I'm going to remove my name from that ballot. And I'm curious if you can walk us through what's going on. I guess it's Wisconsin and Michigan, where ironically, the Democrats have just had no problem getting Joe Biden's name off those ballots and putting Kamala Harris's name on it. But RFK Jr., who worked really hard to get on those ballots, now can't figure out how to get his name off. What's taking place? Is it politics, or is this just, you know, timeline, law, legal stuff? This is just kind of the way it goes.
There's still time for them to take him off the ballot. And I can tell you it's pure politics, particularly in Michigan. Look, the Secretary of State of Michigan is a woman named Jocelyn Benson. She has got to be one of the most politically partisan elected officials in the entire country. Mm. And I only say that very seriously. This is the same woman, by the way, who for the last 3 years has been fighting in a lawsuit to avoid taking 26,000 people who are dead off the voter rolls in Michigan. That's the kind of Secretary of State she is.
So if RFK Jr. can't just say, I'm not running in Michigan anymore and have his name come off the ballot, I'm not running in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or whatever, he doesn't have the ability to just do that?
He should, and what he's going to have to do, since both states apparently don't want to comply with the law, particularly the Secretary of State of Michigan, is he's going to have to sue to force his name off the ballot.
Man, it's never easy. It's never simple. I heard RFK Jr. saying something to the effect that his internal polling shows a reasonable possibility that at the end of all of the electoral vote counting, we could end up 269-269. And as most people know, you need 270 to win. And then he starts explaining how, you know, if he's got some votes in some of these other states, the blue or red states where voting for RFK Jr. is not going to change the color of that state ultimately in the Electoral College, that he could still foreseeably end up being the president of the United States. Can you walk us through RFK Jr.'s thinking on that issue?
Boy, isn't that an interesting possibility? Folks probably don't know, because this hasn't happened since the very beginning of the country, but if there is a tie in the Electoral College, the president will be decided by the U.S. House of Representatives.
Oh, boy.
The U.S. House. The U.S. House will then make the decision. Each state will get one vote. So if you have a state, for example, where they've got a mix of Democrat and Republican members of Congress, they have to take an internal vote, majority wins, and then that state will cast their vote. The vice president is chosen by the Senate.
Oh my God.
So can you imagine?
This is a movie.
It would be. I mean, it would be quite something if that were to happen. But is he right that it's a possibility? Yeah, I think it is. Think about how evenly divided we are in this country today. And yeah, I think it is a possibility.
Let's get all the crazy out here in one conversation. When you say the House picks the president and the Senate picks the vice president, do they have to be people who were on the ballot?
Yes. Yeah, it does have to be people who were on the ballot, but can you imagine? I mean, you could actually have the possibility that a Republican-controlled House picks Donald Trump and a Democratically-controlled Senate picks the vice president of the Democratic Party.
Can the Senate pick the other presidential candidate to be the vice president? Or does it have to be a VP pick?
No, I think it has to be a VP pick under the Constitution.
So you're saying there's a possibility there's a Trump Walls presidency?
Yes.
Lord have mercy. Although, what an interesting thing that would be to cover for quite some time.
Oh, it would be. And what a plot for a movie, a Hollywood movie. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We're probably getting a little bit closer to that with every day. Everything else seems to be unprecedented. So what next? Hans, thank you for being with us today. There's always something interesting to talk about, and we always appreciate your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Interesting wrinkles to our Constitution. They thought about all of that. I was blown away when I found out that they could tie. What do you mean they could tie? There's got to be like a thumb war or something, and just get that sucker done. Anyway, you can tie. And you've got one, you got like a straggly electoral vote up in Maine. You got one hanging out in Nebraska. I don't know why the state legislature didn't fix that one, but the states that don't have to send all of their electoral votes to the same candidate, things can get crazy. But they've been crazy, so we're good at crazy. Let's take a quick break. Wiggins America, when we come back, the YouTube live chat poll for today is, do you know anybody who may switch parties when voting for president? Yes or no? You let us know what you think at the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Go vote in the poll. It's right there in the live chat portion of today's live broadcast. Let us know what you think. If you download that Odyssey app and you stream us on the Odyssey app, you find 97.1 FM Talk on AUDACY Odyssey app. There's a little microphone right next to where you click play. You can send us a voice recording and tell us what you think about the poll. We'll be right back. My baby.